For the past 11 weeks, we have been bringing you the entire proceedings of a remarkable conference. It was held on 2010, April the 15th, at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. President Obama outlined his new vision for human space exploration and invited conferees to advise him on how to implement his plan. The invited attendees, each an exceptional leader in America's space program and supporting industries, responded with a wealth of ideas. One final session remained. We headed out of the restricted area of the Kennedy Space Center to the nearby visitors' complex, which was closed to the public that day, well, that particular evening. The public had been cleared from the Astronaut Encounter Theater for this plenary session. I was one of only four reporters admitted to this august company. I plugged my recording equipment into the theater's audio system, and to my dismay, I found there was a very bad mains hum on one channel. No amount of replugging, jiggling, or trying different output lines would get rid of it. So I just had to live with it. What you will hear tonight is the left-hand channel, which I am splitting back into two channels so that you, dear listener, can hear a normally centered, balanced signal. What with all the hassle, I barely had time to look around at the assembled conference delegates. Over there was Australian-born astronaut Andy Thomas. Earlier in the day, he had told me how proud he was of his wife, who was soon leaving for the Baikonur Cosmodrome to fly on a Soyuz spacecraft to the International Space Station. And, as always, near the front was Buzz Aldrin, who had so generously given me an interview earlier in the day. Former Moon, Mars and Beyond Commissioner had quite a few admirers gathered around him, as he no doubt was regaling them with his flood of ideas on how to support the space program. Too bad he was well out of my hearing distance. But my search for familiar faces in the throng was terminated as NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden stepped onto the stage and called the meeting to order.
Thank you all very much for coming. I hope everybody had as great a day as I did. It has been a tremendous day for, I don't think just for NASA, but for the country. We were all treated to what I have come to know as an incredible leader when we had the president here earlier today. And particularly for the NASA employees, I will say thank you one more time for his efforts in coming and for his vision. What we want to do, I managed to get around to each of the four groups for just a little bit of time to listen to what was going on, and I know you had some vigorous discussion and lots of information passed. And what we want to do now is take about no more than 20 minutes, okay? I know everybody's had a long day. And I'm going to ask each of the breakout group leaders to give us about a five-minute synopsis of what was discussed and what were the significant findings or issues in their group. And then I will remind you one more time, for some of you who did, well, since everybody didn't get to do what I did, everybody didn't get to go around to every group, I am told that starting tomorrow, I would say give it until noon. If you go to NASA.gov, then you'll be able to find a link for each of the four breakout groups, and you can just play it to your heart's content. Let me go back to what I said when I was on the podium before we started out. This was a great day, but as the president said, this is a beginning. Unless we take what was done here today forward and do something with what we heard and make changes and become innovative in the way that we do business, and that's not just NASA. That's every one of the organizations that's represented here. It is going to be, it is going to have to be a collaborative effort among NASA, academia, industry, and a group that wasn't significantly represented here because I didn't think about it, and that's our international partners. I'm not sure how many people talked about internationals in their groups today. I didn't, because I was passing through, I didn't hear a lot, but the things that we want to do cannot be done without international partners. Senator Nelson is here. I know Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee was here, and I think she may have left, but Senator Nelson knows my message, and we are going to have to get help from Congress in becoming a little bit more flexible about allowing us to involve international partners in a way that has never been done before. So this is something I will go out on a limb saying this is something that the whole nation has got to get involved in. I've been really excited leading up to this because, you know, I don't read papers a lot, but in traveling around the last week, it is incredible being a space junkie when every day you pick up the paper and on the front page there's something about NASA, and it's these guys are right, these guys are right, these guys are right, these guys are right. What we are starting to do is have the intellectual discussion around the nation that we probably should have had 40 or 50 years ago. So I thank all of you for coming. I really want to thank the college students who are here. I have had a chance to talk to a number of them. I know you didn't have to do this. You could have been out, you know, throwing a frisbee or down on the beach or doing something, and you chose to come here and spend your time with us, and I think that's really important. So without further ado, I'm going to ask John Holdren if he would start, and John, talk to us a little bit about your group.
Well, thank you, Charlie. We had a terrific group. The focus was expanding our reach into the solar system. The presentations were so rich and so informative, I can't possibly do justice to them in the 5 minutes or less that I've got, but I'll just mention a few highlights of each. We started hearing from Ed Crawley, a professor of aero and astro at MIT, former chairman of that department and a member of the Augustine Committee. He started by pointing out that what we're really talking about is a new exploration strategy. A strategy is not just a destination. It's not just a particular way to get there. It's a way to explore space and to think about how we're going to do it in the context of why we're doing it, what we're trying to achieve, and really making our approach to it, the combination of missions and capabilities, match what we're trying to achieve. And that includes, of course, inspiration of the next generation. He talked about the importance of having a strategy that is flexible, that is enabled by capability, and that is guided by discovery, a strategy that evolves as you go along and that has many destinations, many specific accomplishments and achievements, milestones along the way that, among other benefits, permit us to learn as we go and also keep people engaged and inspired as they see this progress, these various specific missions. We heard then from Dr. Scott Hubbard, first Mars program director at NASA headquarters, past director of the NASA Ames Research Center, who talked about the synthesis of robotic and human exploration. He pointed out that all space exploration is human exploration. Sometimes we go in person, sometimes we send our emissaries, which nonetheless we control. We control them from afar, or we control them from somewhat closer, as from orbit around distant worlds. And he pointed out that the way forward is really going to be a synthesis of robotic and human missions, exploiting the unique capabilities of each and the unique symbiosis that we can derive from joining those capabilities in intelligent and innovative ways. We heard as our third panelist from Dr. John Grunsfeld. John is popularly known as the Hubble repairman. He is a veteran of five space flights, has a PhD in physics from the University of Chicago. Three of his missions were to service the Hubble Space Telescope, spent a total of 60 hours in extravehicular activity, one of them a single spacewalk of almost 8 hours fixing the Hubble. And he had a number of interesting things to say about what we need, the pieces we need to put together, more economical access to low Earth orbit, the heavy lift capability we need to go farther and faster, modular exploration architecture, which certainly is what we're talking about in the president's new vision, and frequent and compelling missions, again, a theme that we had that we had heard from each of our other panelists. But I should say, I thought the most remarkable thing he said, he was talking about among the possible missions of visiting an asteroid and showing that we could change its trajectory, which would demonstrate once and for all that we're smarter than the dinosaurs and could therefore avoid what they didn't. I think that actually that's a very compelling message among many others that we heard in our session. We also had some terrific comments at the end from some folks I called upon in the audience. Buzz Aldrin, sitting in the front row, was irresistible to call on Buzz, and he had some further inspirational comments that demonstrated once again that Buzz, although he has an incredible career to look back on, is still looking forward and thinking about innovative ways to get to a range of destinations, including Mars, and do interesting things there. We heard from Lori Leshin, the Deputy NASA Administrator for Exploration, who told us some very exciting things about where NASA was going to be going in the years ahead with a variety of kinds of missions. And as the last question we had time for, I called on Bill Nye, the science guy, who is an expert at inspiring kids, to talk about the potential for inspiration in the sort of program we're talking about, and he did a fabulous job. I think we're going to enlist him full-time to help us inspire kids with this program. That's a quick survey.
Thank you very much. I'm going to do something that I said I wouldn't do, but I'm not going to tell you what it is until we get through all four. So you can sit there and think, what am I going to do?
And that was NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden thanking President Obama's science advisor, John Holdren. We are at the Kennedy Space Center, where team leaders are summarizing the evidence given by attendees at the American Space Program for the 21st Century Conference. The next speaker, Lori Garber, is NASA's Deputy Administrator.
Lori, let me ask you if you would give about 5 minutes on your group.
Thank you very much, Charlie. The mind reels. So we have diverse and important aspects discussed in my panel of harnessing space to expand economic opportunity. And we, too, had a great discussion, really focused on how the plan is explicitly has the goal of creating a continuous improvement of American capabilities in space, which will open up new opportunities for the economy, and how this is a basic underpinning of the plan. In addition, commercial procurement of space transportation services are to provide the incentives for improvement in commercial capabilities, and that costs then will be reduced as capabilities increase, and allowing for the development of a new private sector activities that employ those capabilities. So we talked a lot about basics of the job programs in Florida that the White House has announced, the new task force. John Fernandez was there from the Department of Commerce to talk about this 120-day study that the president announced will be due on his desk on August 15th to outline the economic development activities utilizing the $40 million that we're going to invest in this area. Dale Ketchum was one of our panelists. He is a longtime Florida resident, and he is now the director of the Spaceport Research and Technology Institute at the University of Central Florida. And Dale talked quite a bit about how this president's plan does something that we've been wanting to do for a long time, which is to develop that diversified business case for Florida. So it's broader than just a civil human space flight. And he was part of the local group that met with the president and talked a little bit about really the engagement and knowledge that this president has on this plan, and his personal interest in seeing, again, space be that inspiration to a generation. We also had Greg Juneman, who is the head of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers Union of the AFL-CIO. And Greg talked about a lot of the technologies that R&D investment has and how that really equates to greater job creation. He talked about the kinds of investments and benefits that come from our investment in the nation's space program and how the plan going forward really will help us capitalize on capturing those jobs. And then our final panelist was Dr. Mae Jemison, who many of you probably know. She is a vocal advocate for the important role that the space program plays in inspiring a future generation of scientists and engineers, having flown on Endeavour herself in 1992 and a former member of the Peace Corps. She's the founder of the Jemison Group, and she talked about how the projects to develop new technologies, as well as those technologies that come from the space program, transfer to real people in the places where you can benefit from them the most. She really talked about the societal benefits that our investment in space engenders into not only our economy, but our education system. And then when we went around to our audience as well, we heard from Bob Cabana, our head of the Kennedy Space Center, who talked about the 21st century launch complex investment that this plan has of over $2 billion, or $1.9 billion, I think, over the next 5 years, and how that is going to help leverage our investments here at the Kennedy Space Center. He was sitting right next to General Kaler, and they talked together about our really valuable cooperative efforts we have with NASA and the military here at Cape Canaveral and Kennedy Space Center. And General Kaler spoke of how space is now woven into the fabric of today, and that the industrial base issues that in many ways challenges that we face are helping with being addressed by this budget. Esther Dyson, who has created, been an investor and is in on a lot of technologies that have gone from the government to the private sector, talked about how she sees so many similarities between what NASA is going through and what happened with the internet a few years ago. She is the chair of our Technology and Innovation Subcommittee of the NASA Advisory Council right now, so that was interesting. And Krissa Christensen, who's head of the Tory Group, outlined the study that they just finished on the investment of the commercial crew and cargo, I believe, part of the NASA plan going forward, that $6 billion investment, and how their analysis was run that states that we develop about 11,800 jobs each year from that investment alone. And then we closed with Neil Tyson, who talked a lot, and I'll brag, he was with some other panel but wanted to come to the space economy panel. So he came and talked about, I think, as you closed on, sort of the frequent and compelling missions that you need to be able to drive the public interest and really the industries into these fields that will develop the innovation that are so important to our nation's economic growth. I'm going to finish with a Dale Ketchum quote that he spoke of, that space is just way too important to leave only to the government. So that was the general theme of our panel. Thanks, Charlie.
Great. Thanks very much, Lori.
That's NASA's Deputy Administrator Lori Garber speaking at the Kennedy Space Center. The next speaker at this plenary session of the 21st Century Conference was Norm Augustine. He was the chairman of the Review of United States Human Spaceflight Committee that recommended cancellation of the Constellation Back to the Moon project.
All right there, Mr. Norm.
All right, Charlie, thank you very much. We were the technology assembly, and clearly an awfully important topic because it does provide the building blocks that will let us do these wonderful things that we've been talking about. The panel consisted of Ed Liu, who is the program manager for advanced programs at Google and, of course, a former astronaut, Bobby Brown, NASA's chief technologist, and Doug Cook, who is the associate administrator for Exploration Systems Mission Directorate. What I plan to do is, well, let me just say that in terms of the importance of the topic, Senator Nelson will remember when I went to see you when we were working on this project last summer, I mentioned that one of the things that was causing us a great deal of difficulty was that the technology cupboard was bare. There just wasn't a lot that we'd been developing in recent years, and we found ourselves using technology from Apollo and from Shuttle and so on. I'm going to summarize our discussion in five quick points. It was a very rich discussion. There's much more to be said. The first point was that the missions we're talking about, particularly the Mars mission, can't be done without new technology, and you can convince yourself of that pretty quickly if you calculate the number of shuttle equivalents or ISS equivalents of mass that you have to have in low Earth orbit to support a reasonable Mars human landing. And rather quickly, you could see that without new technology, one can't get there. Secondly, that what we're talking about really is innovation. And it was pointed out that innovation is generally best done at a rapid pace, where there are a lot of opportunities for new things to be tried. Lots of smaller chunks of progress at a time. Thirdly, the one lesson that sort of came through the discussion was don't try to do technology development concurrently with systems development. We've tried that, and we all know what happens. But that puts a lot of pressure on the technology development to get done so that we can start systems planning. Fourth and most interesting to me, it occurred to me walking over here, we heard about all this exciting technology. I mean, it really is. But not a one of the questions from our audience had anything to do with that technology. It all came was in the vein of NASA is a very fine, very large, very mature organization without a competitor. And those of us in industry know that that's a tough world to live in if you're trying to advance the new thinking and new technology. So the main discussion of our audience was whether or not NASA would be up to moving at the kind of a pace that one has to move at if we really are going to get this technology. For example, with the heavy lift launch vehicle, there's only 5 years to get far enough to where we can make a decision to proceed. And if we don't make the decision to proceed, then there is a danger that this whole program could just slide and get lost. So a lot depends on it. And finally, NASA does have a technology plan, has lots of interesting ingredients, these are the kind of things that inspired a whole generation of people, as was pointed out. My generation, many of us are scientists and engineers, in good part because of NASA. I've often said nothing inspires young children like space and dinosaurs, and we're very short on dinosaurs. So it's important we do this well. Charlie, over and out.
Our next speaker is journalist Miles O'Brien. Our moderator is four times astronaut and now NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden.
Norm, thanks so very much. And we'll end up with Miles O'Brien summarizing his panel that talked about ISS utilization.
Thank you very much, Charlie. ISS utilization is what we talked about, and so as not to bury the lead, I walked away very inspired and excited about the prospects for the International Space Station. And just the thought that it could have been deorbited at the end of 2015, that would truly have been a crime. And to think about what we have done already there, but really more importantly, we've just begun. We have just begun to scratch the surface. We start off with Mike Fole, who's been to the space station as a commander in the wake of Columbia, who has some time on Mir as well, four-time space flight flyer. And he talked about a couple things. First of all, he stressed the point that it's important to increase the operational tempo to the station, increase the number of flights. The more people on the station, as he put it, as I read my tweets here, I can do this in 140 characters if you want. Charlie, make it real short. And he said when he was up there with one other crew member after 6 months, that was kind of hard. Not mentioning any names, of course, but he said we need to have more frequent traffic there. He also talked about the parallel path to the station and how important that was post-Columbia, and how as we march toward a commercial world, we need to think about other ways to get there. Right now, we are soon facing a period of time when, once again, we'll be 100% dependent on the Russians, and that is it's always good to have a backup system of some kind to get to and from that station. Especially a little concerned about that. He said that commercial crew access has to happen as a result. The sooner the better. And we will fail ultimately if at the end of this process of incubating a commercial space entity, we have only one provider of transport to space. He talked about how with the station at the point now where it has a six-member crew, much more time to utilize it. Certainly when there were just two of them on there, he said he spent, 25% of his time on science. Obviously, they were involved in station keeping as much as anything else. He brought out a point which I hadn't thought much about, and we might take it for granted. The amazing construction project that is the International Space Station. We talk about a lot of the science that goes on inside, but the amount of robotics technology that we have pushed with the Canadian arm, Dexter, the Japanese arm, is tremendous. Just the process of building the station has created great technology improvements. And then he summed it up with something that I have personally agree with, that really the greatest accomplishment of the space station, well, who knows, maybe they'll cure cancer in a few years, but for now, the greatest contribution of the station is the fact that you have 16 nations working together. This is, there is truly, I cannot think of anything in history that is of that level of collaboration between other nations. So as we look for ways to make the world a better place, frankly, it might be off the world. And we went from there to Tom Pickens, who's the CEO of Spacehab and was Spacehab, now Astrotech and Astrogenetics. And he's right now in the business and has been in the business of putting experiments and doing pharmacological research on the station, has focused on Salmonella, which, to put it in, and he gave probably the best primer on all this that I've ever heard, frankly, and helped me understand why space is such an important thing. In essence, what happens to things like Salmonella is, for reasons we don't know, as he's put it, it's just a phenomenon, things get more virulent in orbit. The virulence goes to 11, to use a Spinal Tap term, and that makes it easier to find vaccines. You can find that virulence marker much more quickly, and they have, as a result, they're in FDA approval for a vaccine for Salmonella, which is not a huge problem in the developed world, but is an actual killer in the third world. Interesting point, he said, if you think going to space is hard, try getting FDA approval for a drug. Now they've moved into something a little more... potentially, I was thinking of Andromeda strain the whole time, but they're talking about flying, they have flown the staff, is it a virus? Staff a virus or a, what's that? MRSA, which is a virus or a, where's the science guy when I need him? It's a bacteria, thank you. Thank you, science man. Once again, showing my history major roots. Okay, so anyway... The staph virus is up there on the station, but don't worry, it's well contained and it's not going to get out. And they've got it in this thing, and the process of trying to discover ways to attack it is laborious, lengthy, and what's important for people like him who are in this business is to have predictable, consistent access to space. And he was very complimentary toward NASA and doing business with them. Really sees not a lot of problems. I did ask him, however, if there needs to be sort of another entity of some kind to do business, to particularly on the basic research side, to get science to and from the station. Some sort of nonprofit is what I threw out. He said, well, the NIH, that's what they do. Why not make them funnel science to the station? So that might be something to consider. He talked about, imagine if they could come up with a vaccine that would solve the staph infections, which is a huge problem in hospitals all across the world. Brett Alexander, who is head of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, he talked a lot about the benefits of opening up space to the commercial sector and how those partnerships can work. And he talked about... he made the analogy to the world of computers and how NASA, of course, pushed that world along in another generation, and off it went to the private sector, and look what I have in my hand. It's more than they had in that huge room to get Apollo 11 to the moon. And the question that he posed is, if the private sector were to get involved in space, where things haven't changed as much or as rapidly, maybe the Silicon Valley model is what will change things significantly. He also talked about the analog to aviation and how the U.S., of course, Wright Brothers was in the early lead in aviation, but lost that about 15 years subsequent to the Wright Brothers flying to the Europeans. And then the NACA essentially came in, and the Airmail Act and a lot of things were there to stimulate that. And of course, there was a military purpose there as well. We can't ignore that. But the fact is there was an appropriate place for the government to come in and stimulate some growth, and that obviously changed forever the face of aviation. Summing up, he said there's nothing unique about getting to space that should be a government enterprise forever. I guess that's a theme that probably came up in all of these. And then somebody asked a question I thought was a great question, and I didn't plant this, but they said, you know, why don't we know more about the space station? Why isn't the space station more alive for people? Why isn't it in classrooms? Why don't we know who's up there? Why aren't they communicating well? And Tom Pickens, in essence, said, well, we need to send Miles. So that was thank you, Tom. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but he said maybe in the commercial world there'll be room for the likes of me, people who can communicate, as well as do the science. Not saying you scientists aren't good communicators in some cases, science guy. But in any case, that was it. It was a great discussion. We could have gone on another hour easily. I found it fascinating.
Great. Thank you. I want to thank all four of the breakout leaders. However, last question of the day, and there is one more question, and I'd like for them to just very briefly share with you what their biggest surprise, whether it was pleasant or otherwise, their biggest surprise on the day. So Miles, and the day means from the very beginning, you know, when you got here, until right now when I just asked this question, and I'll start with you.
Well, this would be it, the question. No, I was a little surprised, I should have mentioned this. I did ask, why not make the Chinese partners in the space station? And I got cricket as a response. So, cricket. That was it.
Norm?
My biggest surprise was the quality of the lunch that NASA served.
And I have to ask a follow-up question. Is that good or bad compared to your normal lunch? Because I don't eat lunch.
At least this.
So that would be good.
At least this water. At least the water wasn't from space station.
All right, Lori.
You think?
Well, I'm tempted to say my biggest surprise is I haven't yet been blamed for the lunch not being here. But I think I will go with seriously how emotional it was to see the President of the United States standing in front of, as I say, they had me at the NASA flag. But then to have, in addition, the Orion capsule there that we know will now be going not only to the space station but beyond to an asteroid for the first time humanity has ever done that by 2025 in our NASA and commercial and state-owned facility there. It was pretty emotional, and I was surprised by that. But.
Norm, you get to come back because I...
Okay, thank
and
you.
And then I'll go to John.
My biggest surprise was that there was really no discussion of the international aspects of this whole effort until you just mentioned it now. I didn't talk about it, but that is one place if we have a money challenge and a science challenge and so on, that we could get a lot of help.
And John?
I guess my biggest surprise was the level of enthusiasm and excitement with which the president's remarks were received. Given the pummeling we have sometimes been taking in some of the media over this plan, with the pummelers usually not having really learned very much about it. I was worried about the sort of reception the president would receive here, and I thought it was an astonishingly warm and receptive audience, and I thought the president did a great job. That was not a surprise, but the warmth and receptiveness was.
Thanks for.
To wrap up the American Space Program for the 21st Century Conference, NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden had these closing comments.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all of you. And a couple of closing comments here from me. I guess let me apologize, first of all of you who came, because I know it wasn't easy to get here. We didn't make it very easy. And to many of you who are corporate CEOs or you are presidents of universities or whatever else it is, I can promise the next time we won't be quite as the way we were this time. So I apologize for handling it the way we did, but we'll do better. And hopefully we will do this again. Hopefully we will find a way to move this around the country. For some of you who were around before, you know, we tried this once and it was invaluable, except we didn't do anything with it. And what I would like to see us do is do this in other venues, but do something with it. Use it to make a difference. As I travel from group to group, there were several things that struck me again, and it was one, this is a human robotic effort. There is no competition between humans and robots. And I was very pleasantly surprised to hear everybody make that observation. All exploration is human. It's just sometimes we use a surrogate in the form of a robot because we either can't get there or it's too hostile or we just don't know. And so that's what we're going to be about. The other thing I will address is risk. We do risky stuff. And that's not just, when I say risky stuff, that's not just life and death risk. We are going to do economically risky stuff. And I appeal to you to help us as we do that. You know, what I want to do is I want to design, I want to test, I want to go fly, and I want to do that on a routine basis. And the only way you can do that and do it at the pace, Ed, as you mentioned, is accept risks sometimes. So when we fly a human, it's going to be a very, 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 very measured risks. But there are some times that we can do smaller things to set humans up where we can, think about it overnight and then go do it. And you know what? We're going to fail now and then. And that, too, is okay. Because if we fail, it means we really tried hard and we stretched what we thought our capabilities were. So that's very important for all of us to take from this venue and share it with people who weren't here. And then the third thing I'll tell you before I do my final wrap up is talk to us. I'm accessible. Tina hates it because she tries to be the guardian. But, you know, you can reach us by email, you can reach us by phone, you can walk in sometimes and beat Tina up and talk to me in person. But we can only help if we know what you think is wrong. So talk to us. Don't say NASA didn't do this if you didn't talk to us. So I ask you to do that. Mike Foles said it very well. What we're trying to do, and Mike has said this on a number of occasions, what we all want, all of us who have been to space or who want to go to space, we want reliable, redundant access to space. And the only way you can do that is if you open up the aperture. And that means government, commercial, international, you name it. There are probably other ways to get there that we haven't even thought about. And so I ask you to think about ways that we can provide reliable, redundant access to space. I want to thank all of the organizers, from folk in OSTP who did an incredible job, folk around the president and the executive office of the president, folk at NASA headquarters, but most importantly, the men and women here at the Kennedy Space Center, who have been incredible. So I just give them a hand. And then the final thanks goes to all of you, because as I said, I mentioned it about the students, but all of you have day jobs. And all of you have very important things going on. Senator Nelson has, probably missed a vote today. And he's going to catch a lot of grief. But every single one of you decided that this was important, and you came. And for that, we are incredibly thankful. And then I will close by sharing, I consider myself to be a dreamer. Our president uses a term sometime. And it's called the incredible urgency of now. The incredible urgency of now. If we don't take it seriously and we don't understand that it is incredibly urgent for us to do the things that are before us, to accept the challenges that are before us, the Congress, the administration, industry, academia, we have all got to come together and make this happen, because the world, let me tell you, they are looking for us to lead. They want us to lead. And they do not expect us to shrink from that leadership. But we all have to develop what the president calls the incredible urgency, or the fierce urgency of now. So with that, I wish you all adieu. God bless all of you, and have safe safe travels. Thanks so much.
NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden bringing to a close the American Space Program for the 21st Century Conference. With the formal proceedings over, it was time to mix and mingle. I was torn between the urge to take photographs and to conduct interviews. I did have another brief interview with Buzz Aldrin, as well as with Hubble Space Telescope repair astronaut John Grunsfeld. Andy Thomas, again, was very generous in giving me an insight into the day's proceedings. You can see some of my photos of this event on the Space Show's Florida Diary on the Southern FM website. So why not visit www.southernfm.com.au/space. Now, Southern FM is one word lowercase, southernfm.com.au/space. And then look for the Florida Diary link. And this has been the 12th and final in this Space Show series covering the American Space Program for the 21st Century Conference. All programs were recorded, written, produced, and presented by Andrew Rennie.
Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.